Short disclaimer. This podcast is in no way affiliated with the Stars production or Diana Gabaldon. All views expressed are solely our own. Welcome to the Outlander podcast,
where the men are kilted, the women are winsome,
and the whiskey is neat.
Welcome to episode 185 of the Outlander podcast. I'm Ginger.
And I'm Summer, and we are in love with all things Outlander. This week's episode is sponsored by Movement Watches.
One of the things I noticed the most about the watch that I selected, which is the silver, and it is called the Venice, not my watch. It's a friend's watch. Because see, I take my watch, I leave it in my purse, and when I get to work, I put it on. Because I go to the gym in the morning, and it's obviously not a good thing to take to the gym and wear in the shower and everything.
It's not a good thing. It's hefty. It's like an extra weight. You might have one big beefy arm.
That is true. But I have a Fitbit and it's not, you know, I'm not going to go swim with it. I'm not going to go take a shower with it. However, I have it in my purse and I put it on when I get to work or when I get out of the gym. However, a friend of mine also ordered the same one. So the funniest thing ever is whenever I go up to talk to her at work, I look down and I'm just about to say her name and I see her wrist and I'm like, my watch. Yeah, my watch. I'm like, or I say, I love your watch. That's so pretty. And like, oh, she has good taste because she got the same one I did. She also has the Venice. A shout out to a really good friend named Dolly. She loves her Venice.
And I know we've talked about this before, but the company was started by two broke college kids who wanted to wear stylish watches, but couldn't afford them. So they started their own watch company. How many startup stories start like that? I want this thing, but I can't afford it. So I'm going to make
one. This podcast was started by two broke sisters
who wanted to
talk. And we're still broke sisters.
Who wanted to talk about Outlander.
They did much better than we did. We put it out there for free. We have a little bit to learn, don't we? Thank you, friends, college friends, for doing this, because then I have my watch, Summer has her watch, a dude has a watch, and my friend has a watch. We're all happy watch wearers, and many of you have watches. Actually, we've heard from quite a few listeners who have sent us pictures or have emailed us, or mostly it's a picture or on Twitter, say, oh my gosh, I just got my Movement watch. And it's always, don't get me wrong, I think I've said this before as well, of course we want you guys, there's that great offer, we want you guys to take advantage of it because we really do like these watches. However, it still genuinely, pleasantly surprises me, and I think Summer too, when we hear from you guys about that you use the code and that you got your watch, and of course that you love your watch. It tickles me every time we hear from one of you.
So Movement watches start at just $95. At a department store for a watch like this, you're looking at closer to $400 to $500.
And the way they did this is they figured out that by selling online, they're able to cut out the middleman and the retail markup, providing the best possible price to you.
They're known for classic design, quality construction, and styled minimalism.
And today you can get 15% off with free shipping and free returns by going to mvmtwatches.com/Outlander.
This watch has a really clean design. Seriously, I've been getting compliments ever since I put it on. Now is the time to step up your watch game. So go to mvmtwatches.com/Outlander.
And join the movement.
And now on to our read-along. Missed the last two chapters, y'all.
Summer had the hiccups.
Oh, it was so bad.
I know, it's not funny because I've had them and it's painful. Well, but when I said, Summer missed the episode, oh, what happened? She had the hiccups.
It was so bad. Like, I know.
It just sounds so retarded, but I know it's not.
Such a cop-out.
Cop-out?
But to be honest, it was a combination of things. Like, I was about to push through and then I was tired from all the hiccuping and I was just like, I got to call it. The hiccups aren't going away. I can't. So thank you, thank you, thank you to Candida for stepping in and stepping up and covering for me in my hiccup-related absence. And now I have at least two new ways to cure hiccups that I didn't know before. This week, we are beginning part 7 entitled Home Again. And starting with chapter 32, The Prodigal's Return.
Lisa T. writes, Section 7 is entitled Home Again. I find this ironic as Section 5 is entitled You Can't Go Home Again. And yet Claire does go home again to Lallybroch. As Summer said, the title is The Prodigal's Return. Joe B. writes, the title is a reference to the parable of the prodigal son in Luke 15. The prodigal obviously refers to young Ian, but in some measure to both Jamie and Claire. They are all returning home to an uncertain reception. Claire longs for the peace she had at Lallybroch, the only place she ever truly considered her home, in the time after Paris, but before the rising and separation. Jamie is cautious and avoids answering the question about where they will live, but they both reiterate that home is where they are together.
Dude, these whole two chapters are, because I've read the book before, it's like watching The Sixth Sense for the second time and looking for the clues.
Looking for the dead people?
Yes, the dead people and or...
Looking for the people who you don't know who are dead. The non-obvious dead people.
Well, looking for the not even the dead people. It's just looking for the clues, the context clues that Diana leaves along the way for the people who've read it before. Moderately entertaining / maddening.
Lisa T. writes, Chapter 32 is entitled The Prodigal Son. The title alludes to the parable of the prodigal son in the Bible. But the chapter title does not state that it is a return of a prodigal son. Jamie and young Ian are both prodigals, but in reading the chapter, I can't help but think that Jenny sees Claire as a prodigal as well. Okie dokie, so we are on the way to Lallybroch. Claire spends the 4-day trip wondering mostly about her reception at Jamie's ancestral home and what it will be like. She wonders specifically about Jenny. The reason? Jenny is the closest thing Claire has ever had to a sister, and perhaps the only other person who might love Jamie as much or more than she does.
That's a lie. I definitely love him more.
How would she take the story of her shuffling off to France for the last 20 years? I don't even know. I mean, we're probably going to find something out that's related to that, but lots of interesting stuff is coming up. Lisa T. writes, I have always wondered why Claire thought that Jenny could love Jamie more than she did. I'm not sure why Claire thinks this. Perhaps because Jenny has been both mother and sister to him. Martina P. writes, the trip to Lallybroch has Claire contemplating Jenny's acceptance of her return. Claire has great respect for Jenny, and it seems that aside from Brianna, she has been the closest female in Claire's life so far. Claire seems to be more comfortable in the presence of men, but Jenny does earn Claire's respect. She shares the strong love for Jamie with Claire and seems to be the right match. Other females usually fare quite badly in comparison to Claire. They usually have rotten teeth, look significantly older, or have become fat. They stop for a water break on the way, and Jamie disappears. It turns out he's gone to look for a cave to see if anyone has been in it. When I first read this, I thought, huh, I wonder if this is the cave that he stayed in. Or if it's a cave that he knows exists on this way, and seeing if it's been used or if there's been any evidence of anyone being around, if it would tell him if some trouble may be up or something is going on. He finds that there had been a fire built there somewhat recently in this cave that he finds. And Jamie doesn't seem too worried about it, though. And this does calm Claire a little bit.
But she does ask him at one point, are you being chased? Or is someone trying to
find hunted.
Hunted. Yeah. Hunted.
Yes. And that comes up later because there's more about it. But yes, she does say that. Eileen P. writes, it's interesting how Jamie can appear, quote, as though sprung out of the earth by magic when investigating a hidden wee cave, whereas Claire can really touch a stone and travel through time by, for want of a better word, magic. It's an interesting description of Claire as they get closer to Lallybroch, the only home she's really known. Quote, Jamie didn't seem perturbed by the unknown person's possible identity, and I relaxed, the feeling of security engendered by the Highlands wrapping itself about me once more, unquote. Now, whether she meant it or not, I see this as a function of Lallybroch, its specialness, its homeness, its center, its safety, and its familyness. Lallybroch soothes Jamie and Claire alike. Just like it did when he lived in the cave for 7 years, it and the Highlands make Claire feel protected. Diana gives us a little history lesson regarding the Clooney's cage. Joby writes, Clooney's cave, young Ian refers to Ewan McPherson of Clooney, who lived in a cave for 9 years despite the 1,000-pound bounty on his head and then escaped to France. And we will include a link to an article written on the Culloden Battlefield blog site. Jamie is distracted a little, perhaps. Claire's wondering what Jamie is thinking of regarding the upcoming reunion at Lallybroch, and he reveals to Claire that he never speaks of the prince to his nieces and nephews. Eileen P. writes, I'm having a hard time picturing Prince Charles on the run from the English and hiding in caves. Shouldn't the Highlanders have been really angry with him for leading them into Culloden? Even Jamie never speaks of him. Wouldn't hiding in caves be beneath his dignity? How could Clooney suffer his company hiding in a cave with him for days? Do you think Bonnie Prince Charlie really said, mark me, as depicted in the TV series? I don't think that we have, I mean, he probably said a lot of things that we don't necessarily have record of, but I don't know that there's evidence of that. I think that was just something that the writers did, and then it caught on and they just kept going with it as kind of a joke, an irritating joke. Lisa T. writes, this reminds us that Jamie shares so little of his life with his family, but that despite their years apart, Claire can still read his thoughts. And that's in reference to Claire getting the feel that something was up regarding the prince, and she could kind of tell that he wouldn't have most likely revisited that kind of topic, or at least passed it on. 3 hours later, they come up on Lallybroch. Well, that answers my question. That cave was not where he stayed, because it didn't take him 3 hours to get to this to the house. I can't wait to see this scene.
I feel like if it was the cave, he would have said so, because she knew about it. They talked about it. You know, they had the whole like pillow talk that one night when they were talking about your daughter thinks you're, you know, kind of a romantic hero and she's really proud of you because you lived in a cave. I feel like he would have been like, hey, remember that cave
this made me a hero?
This is it. I lived here.
So as they come up on Lallybroch, this is kind of a big thing. I think everyone can agree that they're going to keep the fact that they go back to Lallybroch in season 3. So if they go back, there has to be a scene in which they arrive. Now, it may not be from the outside. It may be from the inside. I'm hoping it's from the outside. But anyway, I hope they keep some iteration of this scene as they, like, you know, how you see it down in the glen or whatever. Because this, it's got to be emotional for Claire. She asks Jamie if they might live there. And he doesn't know. It depends on how things will be. And she replies, quote, it's all right. If we live in Edinburgh or even in France, it's all right, Jamie, as long as we're together, unquote.
Now, see, remember how I talked about the sixth sense moments? This is one of those sixth moments. You think we're going to live here? I mean, it's not a big deal if we do or not. And he gets all awkward, like, it's complicated. Like, but he didn't elaborate on the complication, because if he'd said, well, you know, it technically belongs to young Jamie now, so it would be kind of awkward for me to move back in at this point. You know, there's many things he could have immediately jumped to, but because he's not a liar, or at least not, you know, known for being a liar, he's choosing to say nothing.
Mm-hmm. Claire quotes, home is the place where when you have to go there, they have to take you in. Young Ian replies, that's what I'm afraid of, Auntie. Eileen P. writes, when Claire quotes what I just quoted, I wonder if that is true for her too. Claire feels most at home in Lallybroch. Will they take her in? Lisa T. writes, again, we see Jamie's worry and realize that we don't know everything that Jamie did over the last 20 years. When he says, quote, so long as you'll stay by me, unquote, it is a slightly plaintive question, as though there were a reason why she wouldn't stay by him. And that's true. We'll see. I didn't really remark on it too much, but the listeners, well, we hope you listen. The commenters did much more than I did. And that is, they picked up on in this chapter, maybe a tad in the next chapter. I think much more so in this chapter, they picked up on the fact that Jamie seems a little unsure. Right? Jamie seems a little, this is some of the most, as they get closer to home, he gets a little more, maybe not sensitive, but a little more come to Jesus moment, if you will. And I'm not even talking about Ian. I'm just talking about the whole thing, Claire being back, them being back, them going home, all of this. That's what Lisa's referring to. But this is up until now, or at least up until we left for Lallybroch, it's been all about Claire's uncertainty. And now we're seeing a little more vulnerability on Jamie's side. Claire's still uncertain about them arriving at Lallybroch. She doesn't know about their reception, but we're now seeing more of Jamie's, whereas before we didn't see too much of it.
He's unsure for some really good reasons.
Oh, for real.
And not,
which we don't know yet.
And not just the ones we don't know yet. The ones we do know about are still not great. Because I'm not going to lie, if my daughter took off in the middle of the night and went to go to some other town, let's say I have a 14-year-old. I do not. I have an 8-year-old, which would be even worse. But if my 14-year-old decided she got a wild hair and decided to walk across town from my house to your house and leave me a note that's just like, hey, I went to Tanti's house and didn't tell me any of the other specs. Nobody called me when she got there. And I just sat there wondering if she was dead or alive. I mean, I would be very sure that you would be in a lot of trouble when you showed up at my house, regardless of whether or not you brought my daughter with you.
Yeah, I can see Jamie's unsure of what may happen. Jamie brings up the story of the prodigal son and tells Claire that Jenny will be glad to see him safe back. Likely meaning Ian, but also meaning Jamie, too. He's likely to get a bit of a thumping. Of course, this means young Ian, but they'll forgive him, his parents. One of the dogs who greet them, a pool of dogs comes up and greets them, was named Jockey. I just thought that was an interesting name. Janet, young Ian's older sister, is also there. She's the first one to be introduced to her new auntie, Claire. Eileen P. writes, when wee Janet finds Claire to be merely flesh and blood, do you think her parents told her Claire was a witch or a fairy? Janet fusses over young Ian's appearance, and after she says she'll help him tidy up before their parents see him, he turns to Claire and says, quote, why in the name of heaven does everyone think being clean will help? Unquote. That made me laugh. That is not an untruth. The siblings continue to go at it, though. No, it's not dirt or food or anything else around young Ian's mouth. It's whiskers, he says. Janet's incredulity at this is hilarious. Whiskers, she says? You? That made me laugh. Joby writes, young Ian and his sister Janet's relationship is similar to Jamie and Jenny, the older sister, teasing her younger brother whilst protecting him. The tension between the siblings continue, as though the surprise of Jenny and Claire's meeting again, the small talk and the avoidance of the matter at hand, that of young Ian. Jamie, as usual, brings it to a head, and rather than Jenny's anger, we see Ian's. Disrespect, disobedience, and irresponsibility, rather than the actual act of leaving, are the sticking points for Ian, who disguises his own feelings of worry and concern by referring to Jenny. So, what is this all about? Well, Jenny and Ian are sitting in the, sitting room when Jamie and Claire enter. And they had snacks waiting, like any homecoming, you know. it's a Highland hospitality. So am I the only one that got a little tear prick at this?
Ginger, quote, you are always the only one who ever gets a tear prick.
Between the two of us, yes. But many people have written us saying that they get tear pricks.
Ginger, it's not a real thing. It is a real thing.
It's when your
term,
nose starts.
You've made the
it's
term
when
up.
Your nose tingles. It is like a prick in your nose.
Ginger? I promise you, if you had a prick in your nose, it would not be a tingle.
Tingle? Oh, that's
not
true.
Not tingle. It would hurt.
This is what I was referring to. Quote, it was, this is Claire speaking. It was Jenny that I looked for. She was looking for me too. She sat still on the couch, her eyes wide, turned to the door. My first impression was that she was quite different. The second, that she had not changed at all. Unquote. And Jamie says, we're home, Jenny. And Jenny replies, it's you then, Claire? Oh my goodness, I heard Laura Donnelly's voice there, and I don't normally see a lot of characters. When I read, I see, but when I listen, I hear only. As they're clasping hands, the smell of wool brought back memories so that Claire's eyes blurred with tears, and Jenny hugged her at that. Lisa T. writes, in this scene, it's almost as though Claire is being welcomed by her mother. The way she describes Jenny's hug as, quote, the feeling of being enveloped, warmly supported, and strongly held, as though by someone larger than myself, unquote. So in some sense, Claire is a prodigal daughter returning home.
So they're all prodigals.
Pretty much, yeah. So they drink a dram, but the silence between Jenny, Ian, and Jamie is obvious. Claire asks Jenny how all her children are. And Ian and Jamie exchange some sort of communication, wordlessly. Martina P. writes, I was pretty surprised how stern Ian Sr. was upon their arrival. We do get a glimpse of Jenny's softer side, and she definitely has a soft spot for her baby son. I don't agree with Ian's and Jenny's accusations and criticism as far as Jamie's occupation is concerned. After all, his money is keeping the ever-growing family fed and does maintain Lallybroch and their way of life. Then again, I always find myself in Jamie's corner.
They were totally playing good cop, bad cop.
Yeah.
I feel like even though Jenny's angry at Ian for doing all those things, but, you know, she's still...
He's still her bebe.
He's still the baby. He's her smallest.
Exactly.
He's the last child that she, you know, that was a baby in her arms. So, I mean, it's like, it's hard for her not to see him as that baby anymore. So, I mean, as much as she's angry... And she wants to coddle. You could see her desire to coddle and to just kind of say, it's okay, Ian. And Ian Sr. is like, no, we can't do that. One of us has to be authoritarian. You and I agree it would be me, so let me do this.
Jamie says that he's brought young Ian with him and that he should be there shortly, but doesn't mention meeting Janet. Ian accompanies his son from the scullery. And of course, young Ian is maybe a little bit cleaner, but he's still quite ragged and singed. I keep remembering he hasn't been, 2 days? Maybe 3 days?
Yeah.
It's been 3 days to get there. Maybe 2 days before that when the fire happened.
Yeah, but I mean, he rinsed off with water, not magic.
No, what I said. He still looks singed. He looks like that baby bird still.
Right. I'm agreeing with you. I'm just saying, I don't know what kind of miracles we were expecting the water to have performed.
No, exactly. Not much. Ian reminds us just how much hero worship there is going on with young Ian. Jamie, for himself, really doesn't think that young Ian should be thrashed. But since Ian can't go back on his word, he tells Jamie to do it. It was such a classic move. I love it. Well, Jamie goes out to whip him.
Truly the only way that they can punish Jamie for his part in this.
I know. I know. Jamie goes out to whip him and he first apologizes to him. The discussion they have of how many thrashes to give him is hilarious. Like, he's being so rational. Yeah, I would get this for like a normal bad boy. And then I would get, if it was really, truly bad, it would be like this many. And if it was just awful, I'd get this many. Yeah, we best stay in the middle.
Mm-hmm. Can we entitle this chapter Whip It Like Diva?
Whip It Real Good?
Yeah.
Whip It Real Good?
Whip It Real Good.
Young Ian is being all serious about this. And he has to take his breeches down. When it was done, he thanks his uncle. And then Jamie gave him the strap. Yet again, Jamie is one to take punishment where he believes it is just, especially when others are punished as well. So I wonder if they're going to keep this scene in the show. It's hilarious as young Ian whips Jamie. And again, it really shows a lot of Jamie's character.
Well, like one of our listeners previously told us, every time we say they can't leave this out, they leave it out. Then I don't even want to have an opinion.
We've just screwed ourselves.
I'm refusing to have an opinion on what they're going to leave in and or leave out.
Oh, you know you're not going to be able to stop that.
Not for long, but right now I'm going to hold you.
Exactly. Anne S. writes, Jamie looks at Lallybroch, the place where he grew up, and was laird for too brief a time, with uncertainty. Claire feels her time there was the closest thing that she had to a home, despite 20 years in Boston. And yet Jamie knows it isn't truly home anymore. He is not laird and really has no place, no identity at Lallybroch anymore. Their only certainty is being together. On a side note, Anne writes, lies of omission. 4 days on horseback is a long time and a perfect opportunity to catch up on pertinent details of the last 20 years, Jamie. Just saying. That's right, Anne. He had plenty of time. And if you remember the description that Diana gives us about how much young Ian tries to give them privacy so he doesn't like walk in or walk, you know, wake up on anything. He doesn't even like to see them smooshy kiss. He doesn't want to be around where they're knocking heather boots or something like that. I don't know. So there is not only three or four days.
Did you make that term up, smooshy kiss?
I said it before, but yes.
With Heather boots?
No, I said smooshy kiss, let alone knockin' Heather boots.
Right. You just making stuff up. You know,
Summer, you're asking me silly questions. Who else make, when do I not make stuff up?
You're bad at this. Between tear,
I'm prick, really good.
Smooshy face, whatever, and Heather boots.
I know.
Come on.
Yes, knockin' Heather boots. Uh-uh. I think my brain meant to say knockin' boots in the Heather. But I owned it, and I'm not trying to change my story. I'm sticking with it. I commit. Eileen P. writes, I don't recall Jenny having the sight in previous books, yet Claire mentions here that she always thought she did. That perhaps what Claire is describing as the sight is really just a mother with eyes in the back of her head.
Well, considering what... Well, never mind. It hasn't come up yet. Never mind.
Well, thank you. It is a stroke of genius for Ian to have Jamie dole out young Ian's thrashing. Young Ian gets punished for his defiance by the uncle he idolizes, and Jamie gets put in his place. But what truly seals the deal is when Jamie makes young Ian punish him. That's probably the most succinct and the best way of summarizing that up I have read it, Eileen.
Well, I agree. And it's part of, I feel like, when Jamie all the time is like, you know, I feel... He talks about how close he feels. I'm saying sorry. I feel a lot. I'm sorry.
No, when you just said Jamie all the time, the only thing I thought of was Jamie all the time, Jamie Party all the time, all the time. Okay. Jamie all the time.
Do you know who sang that song?
No.
Eddie Murphy.
What?
That's Party All the Time.
I know it's Party All Eddie the Time.
Murphy. It's Eddie Murphy.
I didn't know. That's
look it up.
Ridiculous. Now I have to go listen to that.
Yeah, you
okay.
Do. That's Eddie Murphy. It's his only hit.
Did he have any more songs?
No, that was the only song. I think it was. I don't even think it was the whole album.
Name, it probably would be a hit.
But he always talks about how, and she, and even Jenny was saying, you always say that, you know, you feel like a father to him, or, you know, you feel like he's yours, you know, well, this is part of being a parent.
Yeah. Yeah.
And this is her saying, you know, because let's be honest, we all know Jamie has children, but he has not had a part in the raising of the children. So he's...
Jamie just gets the fun parts. I'm just kidding.
Kind of. I mean...
Not for lack of wanting.
No, not for lack of wanting. But there's more to parenting than just all the fun stuff. And when they do bad things, they have to answer for them. And you can't just get off because it's easier to let them off.
Yeah, they take them to the gate and you have to pull down their breeches and whip them.
If that's what it takes.
If we're in the 18th century Scotland, right. Then yes. Joe B. writes, Jamie and young Ian have an idealized father-son relationship. Jamie treats Ian like an adult, and young Ian is dazzled by the lifestyle he thinks Jamie has and by the part he played in it. The situation isn't Jamie's fault, but it is his influence. Jamie has taken some parent-like roles in the past with Fergus and Willie, but not the full experience of care and discipline. Fergus, streetwise and old before his time, was conscious of the role he had for Jamie, his employee. The relationship with Willie was constrained by social rank and position, where aside from one spanking, both were aware of how they were perceived by the other. By insisting Jamie give young Ian his punishment, older Ian is giving Jamie the fuller parenting experience he has missed out on. Jamie does give Ian his whipping, but in a show of love and of why he is a good leader, admits and asks for forgiveness for his faults, and takes a whipping himself.
God, it's like Ardsmuir all over again.
I know. What? Why no? For example, The Night Before Preston Pans in DIA. Punishment taken like the men they are. The relationship begun in a closet when Ian was born is cemented.
That sounds so wrong.
I know.
The relationship begun in a closet. Come out of the closet.
Martina P. writes, while it was rather unfair of Ian to pass the discipline of young Ian on to Jamie, it was probably a smart move to have Jamie administer the whipping. Jamie's incomparable sense of justice demands that punishment is due for himself as well.
Agreed, but he never, when he spanked Claire, he never asked her to spank him back. I mean, I wouldn't have minded reading it.
It definitely taught young Ian a lesson, because he never, ever wants to do this to his beloved Uncle Jamie again. It was also very adorable how honest Ian was about his usual punishments. This scene also reminded me when Jamie had to discipline Claire by spanking her for endangering the Highlanders of Fort William. Forgiveness was given after punishment was administered, and the same happened In this chapter, Ian and Jamie finally receive the proper homecoming with hugs and kisses. At that point, you wouldn't have wanted her to, though, because she was... He did it because he had to do it to have her accepted back in the community to prove a point. But we all know he didn't exactly totally 100% hate it. Maybe 95% hated it. But in the book and the show, with how pissed off she was, if she had been given the opportunity to get back at him, she would have broken something. And I think more than just skin.
Okay, that was chapter 32, entitled The Prodigal Returns. The Prodigal's Return. The Prodigal's Return. So yeah, so join us next time when we discuss chapter 33, entitled Buried Treasure.
Thank you as always so much for listening. We look forward to our next episode. Thank you to our generous partner, Zencastr, who offers high-fidelity podcasting. Check out Zencastr and use coupon code OUTLANDER20, OUTLANDER20, for 20% off 3 months or 20% off for a year. Connect with us. Visit our website at outlanderpod.com. Find us on Facebook, facebook.com/outlanderpod. We'd love for you to join our Facebook community at outlanderpod.com/group. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Outlander Pod. That my own.